Hello and welcome to The Hardy Brain, the show that takes athletic, introverted entrepreneurs and leaders and transforms them into ironclad brain performers. I'm your host, Dr. David Hardy. And today on our show, we've got another amazing guest. He is a serial founder of many gaming, health, and tech companies, and is currently the CEO and co-founder of Virtue Leap, a company that combines neuroscience and virtual reality to help increase attention levels and address cognitive illnesses, disorders, and learning challenges. Welcome to the show, Amir Bazorgzadeh. How are you doing today?
It's really, really awesome to be on the Hardy Brain podcast. Thank you, David, for having me.
I'm excited about this show. So before we truly kind of geek out about all the technology and the implications of it, how many companies have you founded and can founding be taught through VR?
I think technically it's three. And really, technically, I wouldn't call myself a founder except for the last one, which is, I call it a founder when it's a venture-backed, kamikaze, burning the bridge behind you, suffering financially and wondering why the hell you did what you did. That's when you're a founder, I think, versus the other companies where, eat what you kill.
Right.
Borderline agencies. A lot of companies, they'll call themselves startups, even though they're agency modeled or service fee modeled. I think product based, proving that your reality distortion field is not just a really big delusion, and that it has legs to stand on. That's a founder, and that's a startup, and that's, I think, I can only count really one proper founded organization under my name.
Wow, that is still extremely impressive, especially when you go into the detail of how much it actually injures your brain. What sort of things happen to you under that stress? And even though you're in the neuroscience world and know about it, what were you kind of calculating along the way of brain cells and neuron connections destroyed by stress and lack of sleep and uncertainty?
Yeah. I mean, you have to be a masochist to decide to enter the emerging technology space, meaning it's not mainstream. So that's already you must be sick in the head to go in that direction. Then you decide to take that non-mainstream technology and apply it to the most stubborn ecosystems of healthcare and education. So, I mean, this is, this is a recipe asking for trauma. There was a period of time, I don't want to mention things too much, so where I talk about what I refer to as that one phase it was true, but maybe it wasn't true in another phase, right? Right now, my post-COVID brain kind of jumbles it all together into one experience, but there was periods of ups, periods of downs, just like any Disney film, right?
Yes.
But I have to say, at one point, just to give you an example of the kind of trauma that I did not ask for, was going to sleep at night. I would get those, not butterflies in the stomach, but really there's a knot in your stomach. And that means I'm not going to be sleeping that well that night. And when I got past that trauma, when I got past that situation, my body had become accustomed to like Pavlovian kind of mechanism that bedtime was stress time, even though it was no longer stress time. So it was such a long-standing stress that my body still believed in certain patterns that I had ingrained in it. So, this stuff is can be very, very straightforward and easy for some first-time founders. I just happened to have embarked on that road where it was the, Herculean task, the Rocky Balboa movie version of it. I didn't ask for it. It's kind of not up to you which story you're, which hand you're dealt, right?
Right, yeah. Now, what is the battle that you're taking on with education and healthcare? Like, these are two archaic institutions that are just doomed for disruption, and I hope it happens yesterday.
Yes. I mean, I'm turning 40 this year. Hossein is my co-founder and CTO, working together for over 15 years. He's a couple years older than me. I only say that not because age really matters that much, but it means a lot in terms of what choices you make. And we chose to do this startup, this company, because it really is. I don't want to say the sugar-coated way of describing it, but it is mission driven. Like
You
don't do a masochistic thing unless it's mission driven, right? And
absolutely,
autism lives in our blood. Cognitive disorders is something we face personally in our lives. So it has a taste that drives us. That taste. It's not just jumping into an arena for the fun of it, because there is very little fun at certain points. But what we're looking at in terms of our kind of company and our kind of technology is, I think we're not, as humans, we typically are avoiding big issues until it's right at our doorstep, and then we retroactively start dealing with it, whether it's climate change or any of these kinds of examples. When it comes to the current cognitive crisis that I'm trying to yell on the hilltops of the four corners of the earth and let people know that, social media dopamine screw up mechanisms like TikTok are across the board everywhere on all the social media mechanisms. And they're designed in such a way that I think we're only going to find out in about 5 years that particular method that they employ, it very effectively reduces our sustained attention skills. And in the literature, we always know that when you reduce your attention level skills, your cognitive health, your mental health disorders like depression, they rise. It's like a perfect one-to-one sort of relationship. And so our technologies are all about, can we counteract these types of deteriorative effects that are happening on our cognition, on our ability to concentrate?
Right.
And can we diagnose it? Can we screen it? Can we evaluate it? Can we measure it? Can we serve as a therapeutic for it? That's what we're combining virtual reality and neuroscience to accomplish.
I love that. Now, you mentioned obviously how tech is destroying our attention span. We can even dive into just the amount of screen time, how unhealthy that is for the brain. And then, of course, the lack of movement and sedentary is just mind-blowing what the effects are. Like, it's more than just a little ding or a little grasp of dopamine here and there. It really does do a lot of damage to the brain, and we don't have data for 10, 20, 30 years down the road. But what are the other concerns then with virtual reality with this too? Like, you hear about virtual reality and vertigo. How can we actually treat the brain with these technologies then? And how do they work?
Right. So rule number one of speaking to me is, I'm not very popular in the industry because I don't like virtual reality except when it has to do with education or healthcare. Those are the only two aspects. If it's escapism, if it's shooting a very clever zombie in three dimensions, these are things that I really rather be at the beach or going on a hike someone at an actual bar. I'm not there to be social. I don't care about any of those applications. In fact, I detest them. I'm not someone usually chosen to speak at a conference about the metaverse and any other buzzword. The fact of the matter is, virtual reality has a technological wizardry to it that has all to do with the fact that the nonverbal side of me, the part of me that when I'm in a lie detector test and I'm trying to tell the cop that I didn't kill that person that I did, my body decides to betray me. The nonverbal sides of me decides to tell the truth, and it commits, it commits the truth. So there's a part of us, our autonomic nervous system, the integral wiring of us. There's a certain kind of subliminal intelligence that we're not aware of, that my knees start to shake because of my vertigo of heights, right? Even though I'm in a VR simulation, it's not real. My vestibular balance system makes me start to tremble. So behold, VR causes multiple experiential, emotional circuitries to believe that that digital format is real, because that digital format is the first digital format to be embodied. And so when we have to deal with phobias, like exposure therapy treatments, cognitive behavioral modification, cognitive exercises that need to understand that cognition is not just mental in this intellectual kind of prison category that we have, but it's actually cognition is embodied, which is very much
embodied. I love it. Yes.
Right? And neuroscientists, I would say, if you spoke to them more and more on the bleeding edge, they will agree that cognition is embodied. Neuroscience is a research into the whole human ecosystem.
Let's dive into that, because basically my perspective on it is that with embodiment and all of kind of neuro-rehabilitation is we're stimulating different receptors, different nerves, different parts of the brain. And that has been kind of the essence of all sorts of healing modalities for thousands of years, whether it's aromatherapy, acupuncture, chiropractic, exercise, trigger points, all of these. They stimulate different receptors, different parts of the nervous system and the brain. And then cognition is just like a cherry on top of the sundae, that there's so much going on, like you mentioned, from those autonomic responses to the trembling knees to stress to the basic one, which most people aren't aware of, is your vestibular system is the fastest, heaviest myelinated system in the whole brain. And it sets rhythms and oscillations of other parts of the brain. How are you kind of hacking these systems then and integrating them? And what ultimately would be like your dream of where to take this then?
Because I was at, I was at a trip last week in Marseille with their institute. It was very much focused on, if we're going to spot things like Alzheimer's or any cognitive disorders, we should be watching the body first for the earliest signs. No one ever tells me that. No one ever tells me that. The body and the mind, are they one? Are they? Are they not? Did the Kung Fu master on the hill lie to us? Or is that the truth? Do we have to revisit that? They both will reflect one another. If I have a mental hiccup, it will eventually show in some sort of body manifestation. Is that true or not? And VR allows us to study it on the one hand, if we want to research that hypothesis. It doesn't have to be the actual modality of the therapy or the screen tool itself. It could be a measuring stick. It could be a we're collecting just with VR systems for the very first time. Physical postural data alongside physiological sensors like heart rate variability, pupil dilation tracking built into the headsets. The new Apple headset, Device Vision Pro, has facial gesture tracking, and they have a patent that shows they're very interested in how facial gestures can imply and calculate your emotional state. So, it's there, and it's all ready to kind of be studied from the point of view of the measurement. But the fact that we employ it ourselves is, first of all, our main product, Enhanced VR. It's a brain training library of 15 exercises in VR. And two of those main categories of the games are motor control skills and spatial orientation. There's a subcategory of spatial audio awareness. So we're always particularly also not just tracking it, but we're also engaging it and focusing on it. Every game in a virtual reality environment always is incorporating your spatial orientation anyways and your motor control skills. So our backend system is tracking minimum 250,000 data points every 2 minutes of that combination of physicality, motor controls, as well as the traditional cognitive categories. And trying to, if we're going to try to evaluate the quality of your cognitive function in a particular domain, then we better approach it by incorporating all of you. And then also, see if that engagement of all of you also has more, you soak it up more. It actually has that deeper, longer lasting effect. It's not just something that can be kind of cast aside as something that you're simply tapping a screen with your thumbs and fingers and assuming that's the same quality of a full-bodied involvement and interaction.
Right. Now, how does this translate then into kind of short little neuro tasks going into more sustained attention and focus then versus, your old video games or social media?
Well, you know, you go, okay, first of all, the literature is not there yet on whether such a thing as far transfer exists, whether I'm going to be able to remember those people at that conference any easier, or my grocery list, or do my calculations any quicker. Personally, I think for the general population right now, I told you what I think a pandemic's coming of cognition crisis, where everyone's going to have ADHD, not just special people having a attention deficit. Now, who doesn't have this? Thank you to TikTok. But in general, I'm not really a big believer of far transfer as a thing that anyone who has a good diet, good social circuit, a lot of, you know, they're ticking all those right boxes. I really think that person's not going to see too many upticks in the general kind of caricature of where they're strong and where they're weak. The areas that we've seen evidence is when someone has a disorder or a learning challenge like ADHD, where we do see kind of like there's this area that can be filled and brought back to kind of a higher threshold. So it's very specific where I think a therapeutic can happen. Like if you have long COVID, if you have chemo brain, if you have a traumatic brain injury, all these kind of things, I think it can serve as a therapeutic because you're not at your, let's say, optimum.
Right.
I don't believe we can become superheroes in any of these cognitive of areas. What I do want people to do is focus on becoming aware of where they're weak, cognitively speaking, and using our games particularly on those weak spots, because no one wants to know about their weak spots and everyone hates working on their weak spots. So that's one of the areas we think we can help for wholesomeness.
And no, I really want to stress the point you just made, because that is absolutely correct, is that everything you mentioned are like the foundation of how a good, healthy brain works. And we're working on all these little cognitive skills on top of it. So we're like hanging curtains in a house where the basement is cracked, flooded, and broken. And it's just insanity. Another great example is, you're working the weaker areas of the brain. And we all have parts of our brain that are strong and weak. So it's kind of like if you took an athlete and assessed their muscles and found the weak muscles or the compensations and started to correct those, like, why wouldn't you want to do that?
And we're not designed for it, David. I'm telling you, there's like a weird, magician or sorcerer up there somewhere messing with us, where we're see everything topsy-turvy. We have this kind of, I think, at least speaking for myself and any of my, you know, childhood, university sort of friends playing FIFA, and when you're winning, you love it. When you start losing, you hate it. We worship like becoming a Tiger Woods overdevelopment, like a Popeye giant head. And we don't want to look at our chicken legs. We never want to look at our chicken legs. We don't want to look at it. It's a very weird thing. We do not like when you play our games, you'll basically get a cognitive fingerprint showing where you're overdeveloped and where you're underdeveloped in terms of average scores in relation to the general population of users that we have. And we're always a caricature. It's very rare that you see a person like perfectly kind of like a, you know, symmetrical shape. They're usually kind of jagged. My spatial orientation is so awful that it suddenly, now I can tell my wife why it is that we get lost every time I travel in one of those small towns that I don't know where the hell I am, even after a week. She thinks I'm making fun or not paying enough attention. I'm like, well, actually, it's my disability. I can point to it. I can become more aware of it, you know, and then I can also be proactively trying to do things that can upskill me in that area of weakness, develop my chicken legs.
Right. No, I think this is an important tool, and you're taking this even farther. Like, what organizations are you working with? Like the Roche I saw, the VA health system, MIT. What are some of these collaborative things you're doing to actually get this out to people who do have disorders that are struggling, that need it.
Yeah. Well, until like last quarter where we closed the investment round, now we are very much focused particularly on ADHD as our therapeutic area of priority. We still want to make our technology always available in a DIY kind of way to any institution that has a clinical team that has a particular area that it does have a cognitive component and they want to use the technology. And we're launching by the end of the quarter, just subscribe to it and access it yourself with minimal human capital on our end. But the areas are all across the board. MIT was particularly interested in using an algorithm in our system that takes physiological sensors while you're playing the games and calculates your cognitive load in real time. So we know in our system, based on this algorithm, what your effort level is, so to speak, given your physiology. And they try to compare it with the user's personal self-reported effort levels versus what the cognitive load was saying. That was very much not a therapeutic clinical area. It was more like real research in a particular niche. Whereas the VA in San Francisco, they're focused on alcohol addiction and PTSD as huge risk factors towards cognitive deterioration. A big hospital here in Barcelona, where I am, Val d'Hebron, they're studying whether we can slow down cognitive deterioration in people with type 2 diabetes because that has a 2x risk factor towards Alzheimer's. So every one of these groups is all across. NASA has like 15 different categories in which when you go into space, your brain's going to go haywire. I'm not putting my hand up for any outer space trips. Particularly for that reason. I think that's a whole new can of worms. But I don't think any issue, any disease, any accident that befalls us does not have a cognitive association, especially for what we just kind of described, which is motor control skills, embodiment is cognition. And so if anything goes wrong, cognition will reflect it. In fact, there's a pharma company that we spoke to quite recently where they want to see if in our cognitive data, you could actually detect that someone has potentially depression.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And these two are things that naturally we pick up when we observe other people. And we may not be aware of it, but yeah, when somebody's moving slow, we're like, okay, is everything okay with them? Or we look at facial expressions all the time. The affect is there. And these are markers we've just instinctually have had for a long time. But now we can quantitate them and actually start to put them into a device now and see if the therapy is actually working. And versus, okay, well, that's the clinician's opinion and that clinician has a different opinion than this guy. And so it really is putting the data to things that people have observed for a long, long period of time. And we see it. And how does that integrate now with the humanity behind it that, yeah, we can observe it, but now there's something to actually tell us that our observations are correct. Does that bring more of a humanity to it when we start discussing this and it's not just a data point, but it's a human being that's suffering, and it's not just one human being, it's, well, trillions of dollars worth out there of people who are suffering.
When you first brought up the point of this being something we intuitively are designed to detect, you know, I was thinking about when I used to read a lot of wacky stuff like Chinese face reading and physiognomy in the ancient kingdoms where the a new enemy was spotted, and the king would send their artists to go and do a portrait of the warlord or leader of that kingdom and bring it back. And then their physiognomist would tell them, what is the personality of this man or woman? You know, who are they? What are they like? What are their weaknesses? And all these things. And I can see that coming back in full circle as something, you know, we're not so far away from starting to be interested in Again, because they're detecting as a biomarker things in your eyes, things in your vocal cord, you know, things in your gait, things in your posture alignment. I'm reading neuroscience left, right, and center, where they're going back to these things, very physical, very physiological, depicting something that in facial interaction and observing the outer kind of, I guess, like a tribalist kind of way of looking at, oh, that member of the tribe seems to be lagging behind, or, you know, acting a little bit off, you know?
Right.
The humanity, from my point of view, of this technology is I'm not, it's not lost on me that I'm an anti-technologist in spirit in many ways, and that it's kind of weird that I'm trying to use technology to fight technology, the effect of technology. But one way is more consciously and intentional, and the other way is just like us being ill-equipped to for our immune system, our cognitive immune system, to detect what's happening, what injury that this subtle dopamine kind of mechanisms are having on us. We can't detect it. It's like somehow it's like if in the Dune movie I was watching quite recently, he said the slow blade penetrates. Just came to my mind. It's so subtle that we're not able to detect the issue. And I'm thinking these types of technology, the humanity in it, is can it start to educate us about ourselves in the aspect of self-knowledge? I've always been a junkie for self-knowledge. I'm really a really, really deep into Taoist sort of philosophy at the moment, but where this kind of stuff is more like poetry, of course. But
right.
It's all about my interest in those things is about self-knowledge. What can I know about myself somehow that's in the dark corner of the recesses of my mind? And because I'm ignorant of it, it is ruling me. What do I not know that is in the darkness, that in that darkness, it is causing me all sorts of mayhem? I'm always under the suspicion that there's something I don't understand about myself. And case in point, if I didn't create this company, if I didn't play my own neuroscience games, I wouldn't have known to what degree my spatial orientation was out of whack. And now, ever since, for the last 3 years, working on playing volleyball classes, going outside, doing things like carpentry, focusing on things I would never want to do because right. I know it might, save me a lot of grief in the process. And so the humanity comes from the point of view of let there be light, and their technology shed some light in the darkness, because I know for a fact in chemistry, some chemical processes can only exist and happen in the absence of light. And so when you bring light into the mix, certain negative things just simply can't exist.
Absolutely. Wow. That is powerful. And, yeah, you're also walking the talk on this. You're doing your own training. You're focusing on those weak areas. And then when we do talk about humanity, you want to make this available to everyone. And you're also volunteering with the Applied Neuroscience Association. So kind of back to your mission. And where do you see this tech going, and kind of the numbers, like, how many people are you out to help, and kind of what avenues are you taking to get there?
So we've never had any marketing. We've never had any sales teams. We've always been, except for me, everyone got a science or techie background. And then after we just raised this recent round, now we're going to be, for the first time, proactively looking for these commercial ways of entering the market more effectively, because I think we get about 50 to 100 people register on our app every day. I don't know how they find us. They're just like really looking around for novel content on their headsets. And we have about 64,000 users at the moment around the world across 5 languages. That's all organic. Just about last month, we decided, forget it. We're not going to be going on non-medical sectors as a priority anymore, even though high schools and kids and universities and companies, wellness programs are so interesting and important. I really think, and we decided last month that we're going to go all in on ADHD. And so we're looking at accelerating our clinical pathway, getting the research data prepared and ready to go so that we can be, a digital medicine, digital therapeutic, digital screening tool that is regulatorily approved, has the right certifications. That is where you're finding us, like literally, as we talk today. That is our focus. I was until Apple entered this space just, this month, I wasn't so certain that the path was how long would it be? Is it too early? Because if it's too early and you go in, it can be fatal.
Right, quickly.
But with Apple coming in, I have this intuition that this is the time that a lot of the serious use cases are going to be adopted for their very first time. Some of the OEMs like Meta have really been over exaggeratively focusing on escapism. And I think that's a big error. I think Apple, they have a healthcare focus right off the bat where they're going to go education, they're going to go healthcare, they're going to go serious use cases. And so that inspired me to go, screw it, all in kamikaze, straight ahead. All,
nice.
May the wind be on our back.
And it's going to be. And this is amazing knowledge. And I love the focus then, the drive behind it. And I can see a lot of people getting help. And that's coming from someone who used to teach behavioral students. I had every single neurodevelopmental kind of case in my class. And then went clinical. Wow. So when I talk about this, I'm like, all these kids I knew even before I went clinical that there was something going on in the brain and the education system wasn't helping them one single bit with it. They needed help with their brains. And I just applaud the way you're attacking this, the focus, the drive, the direction you're taking with it, and I want to get this out as well. So how do people find out more information about yourself, your company, and where to find the product?
And I have to say, first of all, David, I feel like we're a fisherman recognizes a fisherman, in certain contexts. And I think what you're talking about, your students are talking about, I think you probably can't recognize that in someone else unless you have a taste of it yourself personally, of falling through the cracks. And there's so much to be said about the Prussian design of the education system. Everyone in the same row and completely avoiding the differences in, let's say, who's a person more kinesthetic, who's a person who's more auditory, who's a person, of this ilk or another, but that's a whole other podcast.
It is. So I have to do it.
I share it with you wholeheartedly, and it's a travesty, but it makes me suddenly get inspired for every time. It's 50 years from now that we always look back and go, whoa, those people were, they thought they were at the end of history and they knew it all. Right. So, but we can't see that about ourselves. Right. Because, oh no, but we're different. We're like the end of history again, But what are we not? And what you're talking about, it's such a big aspect of, I think, one of those areas that we're being not laughed at, but, looked at and go, oh, those poor creatures, they, I don't know why I'm doing a slight British accent, but why couldn't they see what was so obvious, and we have to just take it that way. The company VirtuLeap is, on LinkedIn, I am a hardcore LinkedIn user. I don't mean to say it like I'm proud of it, but I use it too much and I will not stop. So if I have an OCD, with accepting people, reading their invitation. So if anyone, listening to this podcast is a researcher or a scientist or some sort of healthcare provider, please reach out on LinkedIn and we can connect on there. Our website is virtuleap.com. The contact form is responded to with the same level of OCD as my LinkedIn. So please reach out if there's any interest to learn more.
Nice. Excellent. Definitely reach out to VirtuLeap. Sorry, VirtuLeap. And I'm going to be. I'm waiting for that headset too.
I thought you were doing it like you say virtue, I say leap. I swear, I almost got that. I'm so in your rhythm right now. I'm like,
yeah, we got to plan leap. That one next time.
Epic.
Perfect. Absolutely. And reach out to Amir on LinkedIn. And for everyone listening, stay tuned to the next episode of The Hardy Brain, the show that takes athletic, introverted entrepreneurs and leaders and transforms them into ironclad brain performers. Take care.